Crowds surged into the streets in Berlin, surged toward the palace on Unter den Linden. Troops, in a replay that one sees over and over again in these kinds of tense confrontations, no one knows how it came about, no one would take responsibility for ever giving an order, but troops fired into the crowd, killing a number of the demonstrators. A general wave of violence swept the city. And then, incredibly enough, Frederick William IV, even though the situation was not out of hand, Frederick William IV ordered his troops to leave the city and issued a proclamation called To My Dear Berliners, in which he tried to explain how this had all been an accident and to call for calm and everyone working together. But without the troops, without royal troops to defend the palace, Frederick William IV and his family were at the mercy of the revolutionary crowds. At this juncture, Frederick William really was forced to view the bodies of a number of those who had been shot by the troops. He appeared in public wearing what now would become the German tricolor, and that was the black, red, and gold of the black, red, and gold flag of that the students had carried into the Wars of Liberation against Napoleon in 1813. This would be the banner of revolution for a liberal, united Germany. And Frederick William IV appeared in Berlin in the spring of 1848 with these colors. A civil guard, the sort of Prussian version of the National Guard in France, it was established. A constitutional assembly was elected. And Frederick William finally was allowed by the crowd, by the new provisional government, to leave the capital for the royal residence in Potsdam, just outside the city. This is extremely important, I think, because just as in Vienna, the revolutionaries failed to seize control or purge the civil service, the royal civil service, or the army, so they did again in Prussia. Neither of these extremely important institutions of monarchic power were brought under revolutionary control. Also, I think what's interesting here is that one gets the sense in 1848, both in Vienna and in Berlin and in any number of the other smaller principalities where revolutionary outbreaks occurred, I alluded earlier to a kind of script, a historical script that was being played out. One gets the sense in 1848 that not only did the crowds know what to do, after all, there was the French Revolution to serve as a model, the Great Revolution, the Revolution of 1830, barricades, taking to the streets, marching on the palace. The monarchs understood this too. The next step for the monarchs, though, was, well, what happens then? Well, then there's house arrest for the royal family, and then maybe even execution. So in 1848, it's almost as if the royal families of Central Europe, anticipating this, the worst-case scenario, in a sense, instead of trying to resist, simply step aside, assuming that they can't resist, that the wave of revolution is irresistible, and they step aside in the spring. And then, as we will see, when we talk about the rollback of the revolution, it is almost as if a collective light bulb, I suppose in the middle of the 19th century, wouldn't say light bulb, but a collective candle is lit above their heads when they suddenly realize in the summer of 1848, in the late summer, early fall, wait a minute. Nobody's been beheaded. There hasn't been a move to execute the royal family. We still have the army. We still have the civil service. And then, as we will see, they use those instruments of power quite effectively. But in the spring, in these heady days of March of 1848, it's almost as if the revolutionaries come racing at the gates of the palace with an enormous tree trunk to smash open the gates, only to have the gates flung open at the last second, and monarchy allows them to come sailing inside the halls of power. This is certainly an ex post facto view of this. In the spring of 1848, the monarchs, the princes of Central Europe, were fighting for their lives. Not only does one see everywhere in German Central Europe